Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Erevin is daf Pei Dalet. Okay, I will say this, we're behind, but that's fine. We'll catch up. Not today, but over the course of the next couple of days, we'll catch up. And one of the reasons why we fell so far behind is because we are trying to wrap our heads around the numbers of the Gemara. The Gemara started, Mishnah started back on Pei Beis Amud Beis, and the Mishnah wants to know Kamu Shiro, meaning how much. So as I explained yesterday, just a quick overview of what we're actually talking about, and like I said yesterday, first we'll look at the forest and then we'll get lost in the trees. But first let's take a look at the forest. We are now talking about Eruvei Tchum. In other words, not Eruvei Chatzeres. Eruvei Chatzeres was back in the 7th parak. 6th and 7th parak of the Masechet is dedicated to Eruvei Chatzeres, but now as we start the 8th parak, we're talking about Eruvei Tchum. And as opposed to Eruvei Chatzeres, where I just need to set up, let's say I have a lot of people, more than 18 people living in a Chatzeres, so I just need two meals for everybody. And that's enough for everybody. But when it comes to Erev Tchum, there's a specific amount per person. And that is a specific amount. It's two meals. I need two meals of a particular food. I need two meals of a particular food in order to establish my new residence in another location. So it could be any food, right? We've already made that point a number of times in the Masechta. But we're now going to be talking about bread. So how much bread do I normally accompany two meals? So this is subject to a machlokus. It could be a four-way machlokus, but to make life simple, we're just going to focus on two positions. That's Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. And again, just to simplify, yesterday we got involved in the nitty-gritty, but that's because the Mishnah did, and that's because the Gemara did. But to make life simple, what comes out is that according to Rabbi Shimon, and I gave you this little cheat, according to Rabbi Shimon, the magic number for the Erev is a loaf of bread that's 8 beitza, meaning each meal is going to have a loaf of a volume of 4 beitza. Two meals are going to have 8 beitza. That's according to Rabbi Shimon. And according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, it comes out that each loaf is going to be 6 beitza, meaning two meals is going to be of 12 beitza. And essentially now what happens is that we start from there and I made a mistake. I went with the Mishnah's numbers. Okay. Remember what we did is we cut that in half. Remember how we did that yesterday? We cut in half? Because we said that even according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, even though, yes, it's true, when you're going to make 12 egg volumes out of your loaf, but half are going to go to the baker and half are going to go to you. So take the number 12 and divide right in half. It's going to be 6. Here, doctor, I don't know if you got my little cheat sheet. So the half is going to be 6. So in other words, again, go to the second chart. Sorry. So it's really 8 versus 6. For Rabbi Shimon, it's going to be 8. And for Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, it's going to be 6. Thank you. That's much better. Okay, so that's how much bread you need for your Eruv. Rabbi Shimon says 8, and then Rabbi Yochanan says 6. And then the point that we made yesterday, the Mishnah says, as long as now we know our starting point. Now let's, for the time being, just ignore Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Let's just focus on Rabbi Shimon, again, just to make this simple. Now the Gemara says, so I need, in order to make my Erev Tchum, I need to lay down bread, the volume of 8 beitzas. Then, Beis HaMenuga. Remember the halacha we spoke about yesterday, when you walk into a house with Sarah, so you become tummy immediately, your clothing's on time delay. When do your clothing become tummy? The amount of time that it takes for you to eat a meal. How much? Pras, a half of a loaf of bread. Well, now that we know that the full loaf is 8 beitza, half of a loaf is going to be 4 beitza. Again, let's just focus on Rabbi Shimon. Then the Mishnah went on to explain Psul HaGavia, that if a person eats tameh food, he becomes tameh. Now, as we mentioned yesterday, that's not a din d'oraisa, that's just a din d'rabbanan, in the sense that you do not become tameh by eating tameh food. You become tameh by coming into contact with an avat tumah. However, the Chachamim goes there, that by eating tameh food, you're going to become tameh. When the Chachamim make this gzera, if you'd like to see, I glossed over this yesterday, I did not mention this, so I'll just quickly, the Tosfos on Pei Beis Amud Beis. So Tosfos over here talks about when exactly this enactment was made. Possibly, says Tosfos, before Yud Ches Davar, before the 18 enactments of Beis Sham and Beis Hillel. Okay, Tosfos, Pei Beis Amud Beis. Anyway, so half of the pras, meaning a quarter of the total, is going to make a person puzzle. Okay, so again, look at your handy-dandy chart. So that's two eds. And then, the Mishnah doesn't mention this, but the Gemara now notes, half of that. So now we're at an eighth of 8. That's one egg. The volume of one egg. If you have food, the volume of one egg, could be any food, comes into contact with Tumah, the food will become Tameh. Okay? And this is what's called Tumas Ochlin. Tosfos points out, I think I ended on this point yesterday, Tosfos points out now, that throughout the remainder of Shas, you're going to hear time and again, how much food do you need in order to become Tamei? A Beitza. You need an egg volume of food in order to become Tamei. Now we know, based on the Gemara, based on yesterday's daf, that is according to Rabbi Shimon. Now, for now, we'll just take a look at the other side of my cheat sheet. So what if you hold like Rav Yochanan and Broca? So everything, the starting point is going to be six egg. So now your half, your quarter, and your eighth are going to be slightly less. Your half is going to be three, your quarter is going to be 1.5, and your eighth is going to be 3/4, if all that was clear. So that means then that according to Rav Yochanan and Broca, how much food do you need in order to become subject to Tumah? The answer is going to be 3/4 of an egg is going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay. That is all the Gemara that we did yesterday. We are now in Pei Gimel and Aleph. We are continuing in the Gemara, the Vetani Didan. We are 2 lines down from the very top of the Amud. Okay, just a note, today's daf is daf Pei Dalet. We'll get to Pei Dalet today. In fact, I'd like to do a considerable amount of Pei Dalet today. These next couple daf are shorter, so my plan of catching up will be over the next couple days. And also by having Stuart say the daf tomorrow as I'm in North Miami Beach for Shabbos. And he's much faster than me. So those are my plans. Okay, V'tani didan maitamalo tini tumas ochlin. The Gemara now wants to know our Tana. Meaning, good, now that we know the flow chart, just a simple question asked the Gemara, our Mishnah missed an opportunity. Meaning our Mishnah went over the shear of Erev, the shear of Beis HaManuga, the shear of Psul HaGaviyah, but the Mishnah didn't go over tumas ochlin. And the question of the Gemara is very simple. Why not? My time alot tini tamas ochlin mishum delo shavishi rai la dadi. So the Gemara says, because truth be told is that we don't have perfect agreement on what exactly is the shear of tamas ochlin. What does that mean? We don't have perfect agreement. So as we go through the Gemara, you'll see. The Gemara says, the Tanya, first we're going to learn a couple of braces together. Kamashir chasi pras. How much is a half a pras? Beis beitzim chatzur kima. Divir Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda puts it at, now by the way, we're at Psul HaGviyah, which is the quarter of the loaf, of the Erev loaf. So he puts it at 2 eggs minus a little bit. Okay. Again, it's like, we're really nitpicking right now, meaning we're really fine-tuning what the shear exactly is. And as you'll see, it's not exactly 2 eggs. So Rav Yehuda has it at 2 minus a little bit. He doesn't tell us how much that little bit is. Rav Yossi Amar Beis Beitzim Sochakos. Rav Yossi says 2 larger eggs. But you know, when you go to the store, okay, large, extra large. So he says extra large. So Shir Rebbe Beis Beitzim Va'od. Rebbe, when he went to the Psul HaGviyah, the Shir Psul HaGviyah, the quarter of a loaf, it came out to 2+. Okay, that's great. What's the plus? Kama Va'od. That's what Gemara wants to know. Echad Me'asrim Be'Beitza. So it's 2 plus another 1/20. Okay, so tack on another 5%. Okay. The Ilu Gabi Tumas Ochlin, Tanya. Now, that's all relative to the Psul HaGviyah, so you already see that there's discrepancy in terms of what exactly the quarter of a loaf is. It's 2 eggs, but some have it a little bit more, some have it a little bit less. It's not precise. The Ilu Gabi Tumas Ochlin, Tanya. Now, let's go to Tumas Ochlin, meaning we're dropping now to the smallest shear, the eighth of a loaf. And the Braisa tells us, Rabbi Nassim, Rabbi Dosa, Amru Kebetza, Shamru Kamo, Kiklipasa. So Rabbi Dosa says, an egg and its shell. The Gemara over here is really fine-tuning what exactly the shear is. So an egg together with its shell. The Chachamim, Amrim Kamo, Belo Klipasa. The Chachamim say an egg, but without the shell. So we're looking at the volume of the edible part of the egg, which means minus the shell. Amra from Bar Papa, Amra Chisazu, Div Rab Yehuda, Rab Yossi. Ava Chachamim, Amrim Kebetza, Umechza, Shochakos. And then the Gemara introduces us to the opinion of the Chachamim, which is 1.5 eggs. 1.5 eggs, the Gemara says, where does that come from? Uman Chachamim Rav Yochanan Broca. So the Gemara says, that is the position of Rav Yochanan Broca, meaning, go back to your cheat chart, and you'll see that according to Rav Yochanan Broca, a quarter of a loaf is 6, a quarter of 6 is going to be 1.5. So the Gemara says that when we have this position that the Psul HaGviyah is 1.5, that's like Rav Yochanan ben Broca. The Gemara says, Pshita. So the Gemara says, now isn't that obvious? Shocha kosa salash minon. So the Gemara says, yeah, 1.5 is obvious. The number is obvious. But what we're introducing us to is the idea that they're not eggs or large eggs, right, or extra large eggs. But in other words, not the standard egg size. He also Rav Dimi Amar. Okay, so far, the Gemara's point basically up until now has been that our Mishnah did not mention Tumas Ochlin because it's not a precise egg. It's not exact. There's a range of position in terms of what it is, with the shell, without the shell, extra large, not extra large. So in other words, our Mishnah didn't mention it because we don't have a full agreement in terms of what exactly it is. Good. Now we move on. Ki Asur Rav Dimi Amar. Now the Gemara is going to, and here we get to the real hardcore math of the day. You could take a look at, again, the chart. The chart's going to be very helpful over here. Shigir, but let me just read it first in the Gemara, and then we'll go mathematically. Shigir bunyas l'rebi, mudya dekundis demin ne'usa. A measuring cup was sent to Rebbe. It was comprised of a sa'ah. It was from the town of Ne'usa. Okay. And basically, this measuring cup held a sa'ah. Now, a sa'ah, is a very large measurement. You can take a look at the top of the page. Sa'ah is the second to largest measurement. What's the largest? An epha. An epha totals 432 eggs. Okay, that's very simple math. You look at the first top of the chart that I gave you, right? One epha equals three sa, one sa equals six kabin, one kav equals four lugin, and one lug equals six beitza. Take all those numbers, multiply them together, and you'll get to 144. Okay. So the, 432. Thank you. I apologize. That's 432. So an epha is 432 eggs. There are three sa'ah in every epha. So each sa'ah, there was my mistake. Each sa'ah, what would you expect each sa'ah to have? A third. Meaning if a epha is comprised of 432 egg, so now take a third of 432, and that will give you 144. Okay. So each sa'ah, what we should expect to see is that this measuring cup that was sent to Rebbe should hold 144 eggs. Now watch what happens. Shir Rebbe, Masan v'shevasrei be'in. Rebbe measured the measuring cup, and this measuring cup held 217. Okay, wow. So we're talking now, we just went from 144 to 217. Okay, how did that happen? So hasa dehecha. So the Gemara says now basically what happened. Now, a little bit of an introduction to the upcoming Gemara. Okay, I don't know many details regarding the whys. You can ask me, and I just simply will say I don't know. So I'm anticipating the question, and I'm already providing the answer. Not the answer, but my answer. I don't know. But over the course of history, the measurements increased two times historically. And again, you can take a look at the chart. I'm on section number 4 of the chart that I gave you. So there was, in the desert, it was 144. Again, my numbers are the original 432 eggs go into an epha. There are three saws in an epha. Each saw is comprised of 144. Okay, so in the desert, he asked me, can you give me a saw of anything, of any food item? And so what you'll get is 144 egg volumes. They then increased the measurement twice. Once in Yerushalayim and again in Tzipori. When exactly did this happen? Why did this happen? So again, I don't know. Okay, so I could be more informed. I'm just simply not. But anyway, but each time they increased the measurement, they increased it by a fifth. Now, you're going to see the Gemara say a sixth. So between you and me, you know how fractions work in the Gemara. The fractions are milabar, and we always look at fractions milagav. So when we say a sixth, it's going to be a fifth. So, and a fifth is 20%. So basically, just for you and I, to keep it really simple, basically every time there was an increase, it was a 20% increase. So you go from 144, you multiply that by 20%, and it gives you 173. Not on the dot, but we round, so it goes to 173. 173 plus another 20%, so that's 207. So basically, even after the measurements have increased to the Tzipori measurements, nevertheless, we're talking maximum 207. So what the Gemara is about to point out is that this measuring cup that was held by Rebbe, that held 217, that's odd. And how did we get to 217? The Gemara spells all this out. So the Gemara goes over the numbers, 144, 173, 207, and even maximum, we're talking 207. And since we're talking 207, how did Rebbe have a measuring cup of a saw of 217? It's a simple question the Gemara answers. La'olam did Tziporis Aisa, Chalta Shadi Alayhu, Shadi Alayhu. So the Gemara says, well, what Rebbe anticipated is that we're going to take off Chala, right? There's a mitzvah of Hafreshes Chala. So in other words, what was given to him was a measuring cup of a sa'ah together with the Chala that will be taken off. Once that Chala has been taken off, then we're left with 207. Now, Chala, how much Chala am I supposed to take off? We just spoke about this a couple days ago in the Daf. So if you are a baker and you're commercial, so you only need to take off 1/48, approximately 2%. If you are a homeowner, so then you have to take off 1/24, approximately 1/4. I'm sorry, approximately 4%. Okay? So, 217 minus Hafreshes Chala, not commercial, but rather Balabayas, minus Hafreshes Chala, and that'll get you to 207. Now, again, you can look at my chart. My chart is going to be helpful over here in terms of getting you to these numbers. So it's not going to be precise. In fact, it's going to be not 217, it'll be 215 and change. Right? So now, the numbers, whatever. Okay, you can take a look over there. It comes out to about 215. So meaning if I have 215 egg volumes, right, 215 beitza, and I'm mafrish challah, which is a 1/24 of that, so it won't... That if I started with 217, it would just simply be too much. Not a lot more, but in other words, more than what we would need. We would need approximately 216 to 215 and a half to arrive at the perfect number of 207, minus the challah. So, chalta kama havya tamne, akati batzole, ela aisi, v'odos de rebi, shadi alayhu. So the Gemara says what you have to take into consideration is the following. Remember, Rebbe's eggs, they were larger. Well, the Gemara said that about 10 lines ago, that Rebbe's eggs were larger by 0.05%. So the Gemara says, so what we're going to do is, it's going to be the 207 of the Tzipori, Sa'ah, plus Challah, plus you also have to add on Rebbe's small little addition. And that'll get you to 217 just about. You look at the last line of that, of section number 4 on my chart, 207 times 1.05, so I'll get you to 217.35. So, Ihachi Havile Tfei, the Gemara notes now, the Gemara did the math also. It's not 217, it's a little bit more than 217. Kivin Delahavi Kebetz, Elo Chashivle, the Gemara says, yeah, but we're rounding. So it's 217.35, so we round down to 217. Okay, good. So that just got us through how Rebbe ended up with a saw that was represented 217 eggs. That seems to be excessive. The Gemara says, no, it works out. That was 217 with Rebbe's eggs, with the additional challah, it works out. Tanu Rabbanan saw Yerushalmi Yisera al Midbar Shesos v'shal Tzipor Yisera al Yerushalmi Shesos Nimsa Shal Tzipor Yisera al Midbar Shlish. So now we have a Brisa, and the Brisa basically now goes back to some basic information. There were additions, so the volumes increased over time. From Midbari to Tzipor Yerushalmi, it went up a sixth. Again, I'd say the Gemara says six. We know that to be a fifth. And then from Yerushalmi to Tzipor, it went up another fifth. The problem with this Brisa is Nimsais. What comes out now is that the Tziporis is greater than Midbaris by a third. Okay. Now, let's take a look at our numbers. Our numbers are, right for a Sa'a, 144, 173, 207. Right? Midbaris was 144, Yerushalmis is 173, and Tziporis is 207. The range, right, from the low to the high, from the high to the low, is 63. So really, we're talking about an increase of 63 beitzim. The Gemara says that increase from beginning to end is a total of a third. The obvious question. A third of what? Well, what are we talking about? Shlish deman. Elam shlish de midbares. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking about a third of the midbares. So michti, shlish de midbares kama, have arban v'tamna. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? So a third of 144 is 48. That's not what we're talking about. Meaning, we're saying that the range of 63 is equal to a third of the midbars, but that's not true. 63 does not equal 48. V'ilu udfa shithin v'tlas. V'ilu udfa shithin v'tlas. And the Gemara says in the range of 63. So v'ela shlishti yushamis. So the Gemara says, okay, it's a third of the yushamis. The Gemara says, that's also doesn't work out. Shlishti da kama shithin v'tlas. V'ilu d'tzipar. I'm sorry. V'ilu udfa. I'm sorry. So the Gemara says, even if you want to go with 173, a third of that is going to be 58. 50, again, I'm just rounding. So 58 is not 63. So Gabi Tilsa. Nichi Tilsa. The Gemara says it's 58 minus a third. V'ilu utfa ha'shisim v'tlas. And meanwhile, the range is 63. V'ela tzipori. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's a third of the tzipori. Tzipori, as we know, is 207. A third of 207 is going to be 69. So the Gemara says, shlish tidak ha'mahavin shivin nechichada. V'ilu utfa samach gimel. And again, that doesn't work out either because, again, the range is 63. A third of the tzipori is 69. So the Gemara says, ela amar of Yirmiya. Okay, so everyone understand what we're trying to do right now? All we're trying to do is understand the Braisa. Meaning, we know the numbers. The numbers are easy. The numbers are 144, 173, 207. The range from low to high is 63. So basically, all we want to try to do now is understand the end of the Braisa where it says, it comes out that that range of 63 is equal to a third. A third of what? What are we talking about? That's all we want to know. Just pshat in the Braisa. So, hachi kama nimsa sashot sipara. Yisera amidbar is karov l'shlish shala, v'shlish shala karov l'mechsa demidbaris. So the Gemara attempts to give an explanation. First, this is Rav Yirmiya's explanation, and basically, Rav Yirmiya says it's close. Okay, meaning, look, 63, 69, okay. We're in the same ballpark. 10%. Right. So that's the first attempted answer. Right, Rav Yirmiya is he not the comedian of the Talmud, right? So, again, I'm not suggesting he meant that as a joke, but okay. In other words, you know, he had a little more comedic flair. So, Maskev la Ravina midi karv kitani. So Rav Nachman says, yeah, but I'm sorry, Ravina says, but okay, but that's not what the Braisa says. The Braisa says we're not. The Braisa does not say we're in the same ballpark. The Braisa says it's equal. So we're looking for equivalency. So what does the Braisa mean when it says it's a third? A third of what? Elam Ravina achi kamar. Okay, so Ravina says, so let me offer the following pshat, which is, nimsa shlish shel tzipore, be'odio shel rebi yisera amechsa shel midbaris shlish. Shlish beitza. The Gemara says, you know what it comes out? It comes out like this. It comes out that if I take Rebbe's sa'a, remember what was Rebbe's sa'a? 217. Right, which, by the way, explains why the Gemara first told the story of Rebbe and his Sa'a, and now goes and explains the Braisa. Had we not gone through the whole Rebbe Sa'a story, we wouldn't have a clue as to what's going on right now. Rebbe Sa'a was 217. Take a third of that. What's a third of that? A third of that is 72. Again, approximately. 72 and a third. So you take Rebbe's Sa'a of 217, that's 72. Take half of the Midbaris. What's half of the Midbaris? The Midbaris is 144. Half of that would be 72. Bingo. Ravina says that's the Pshat and the Braisa. The Pshat and the Braisa is that if you take a third of it, but in a third of it means a third of Rabbi Sa'a, which is 217, take a third of that, which is 72, and that equals half of the Midbaris, which is also 72. Okay. So basically, the Braisa's point is that we almost went an entire fraction greater. What it once upon a time was 144, half of that being 72, now we go all the way to 217, where a third of that is 72. Okay, that's the basic point of the Braisa, is that we nearly went up a fraction. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. We're almost done with this section of the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, Reishis Ariso Seichem, Kedei Ariso Seichem. There's a mitzvah of Afarshas Challah. When you make dough, you have to be Mafrish Challah. Okay, so how much? So it's actually encrypted in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Reishis Ariso Seichem, for the first of your doughs, how much is a dough? I'm sorry, Kedei Iso Seichem, right? What is your normal daily ration? Now, how much is that? We actually know. Meaning, not we don't have to look at our eating behaviors, but all we need to do is look at the Midbar. In the Midbar, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Jewish people man every day. And how much were they given every day? So that Gemara points out. They were, right, well, Rashi goes through the actual numbers. Rashi quotes the pasuk in Yecheskel. Again, I'm going to just give the short version of this whole discussion, but it comes out to a tenth of an ephah. An ephah is going to be 432 eggs, as we discussed, at least in the Midbar. So a tenth of that is going to be 43.2. Okay? And Stuart shared with me yesterday Gematria. It's a good one. It'll help you remember some of these numbers. The word challah. Challah, what's the Gematria of challah? Challah is 43. Right? It's 30 plus 8. Sorry, 30. I'm sorry, 35 plus
5.
5 plus 8 plus 30. 5 plus 8 plus 30. So the so it's 43. So the so they're good. So in other words, so Reishis Ariso Sechem Kedei Iso Sechem V'Kam Iso Sechem. We're on the top of Pegimam. V'Veiz Kedei Iso Samidbar V'Kam Iso Samidbar D'Chziv Amor Sir Saifahu. Good, and the Amor is a tenth of an Eifah. So again, an Eifah is 432. Tenth of that is going to be 43.2. Okay, so in other words, when I have dough that is equivalent to 43.2 eggs, so that is going to require now to be mafresh challah. If I have anything less than that, there is no mitzvah fafashos challah. Now,
this is volume. This is we're converting it to pounds.
Well, no. We keep it at volume. Keep it at volume. Mikan amru. So now that comes out to zayin revayin kemach va'od chayeves bechallah. So it comes out now to 7 log, right? Zayin rivaim, right? A reva is a log. So 7 logs, because and the reason why log is referred to as a reva is because there are 4 log in a kav. So 7 log plus an additional amount. Again, I'm just going to give the short version of this discussion. The additional amount is plus 1 beitza plus a fifth of a beitza. Okay. So if you have that much, you're going to be chayav in challah. Now that's if you're in the desert. Now, but remember, the measuring cups got larger. Now it's funny. The measuring cups got larger, but the actual amount of dough remains a constant. So basically what we need to do, if we want to convert it to the Yushami and to Tzipori, is what we got to keep doing, is we got to keep dividing by a fifth. So, in this case, we're going the other direction. So we'll divide it by a six. So mikanam ruzain revayin kemach vaod chayvas bechala shehin vav she yushamis. That actually goes down to a six of yushami shein heishol tziporin. So now that we use the larger measuring cups, so all I need now is 5 logan of flour, and that's going to be chayv in chala. Okay, so that's point number one. Point number one of the Gemara is that after we have the larger measuring cups, so all I need now is 5 logan of dough, and that's going to be chayv in the mitzvah of challah. Now that would be very helpful for us if our measuring cups were actually labeled. Hey, this is a log, this is a kav.
Doesn't this come to
48? It started with 43.2 in the Midbar. And
38, 5 times 6, no?
Huh?
5 logan times 6, 8, 6, basically is 30, no?
Yeah, but again, because we're using the larger measuring cups, so our measuring cups actually hold more. Meaning the actual amount of dough is a constant. But because we use the larger measuring cups, so therefore, it's you don't need as much. It keeps, the numbers dwindle because the cups get bigger. Okay. Okay, and the Gemara is going to make one final point about all this. And by the way, obviously, as you could probably guess, because we struggle, meaning not us here in the year 2013, but over the course of years, we struggle to convert it. We now know exactly how many logan you need in order to be chayav the mitzvah of challah. Our struggle is to convert the log and the beitzas into contemporary measuring units. So that's why you're going to always see some sort of range in terms of how much dough you need to make challah. As a rule of thumb, if you're making challah with over 5 pounds, again, I'm not a posek, so just, but, you know, I listen to what my, you know, what my wife says at home. So I'm relating, you know, very good information. So, but if you're making dough with over 5 pounds of challah, you have to be mafresh challah with a bracha. Anything, not anything less than that, but anywhere somewhere in the range of 2 to 5 pounds. You're mafresh challah without a bracha, because we're not really sure. So therefore, on the challah will be machmer, and the bracha will be mekel. And then if you're making dough less than 2 pounds, you do not need to be mafresh challah at all. Okay, but anyway. And one last point the Gemara is going to teach us, and that's the following. Our diets, meaning, once we know how much dough, how much man they consumed in the midbar, we basically now know how much we should be eating per day. Right? It's a nice point. The Gemara ends off the whole discussion. So you want to be a healthy person? This is what you should be eating per day. Right? Now we really want to know. I mean, we want to know before also, but now we also want to know in terms of our health how much we should be eating per day. So the Gemara says we should be eating 43.2 egg volumes of flour a day. It sounds like a lot. Okay, but again, though, we don't know how much, we really don't know how much an egg volume is, but yes, Alken Rav Tan, Pachos Mikam Mekulka B'Meyav. If you eat more than that, you're a glutton, and if you eat less than that, that's not healthy. So in other words, we basically now know, or at least in theory, we now know how much you should be eating daily.
Interestingly, an egg is 54 calories.
Right.
Which works out to 2,300 kilocalories per day.
Okay.
That's a lot. No, that's what you're supposed to be. I mean, that's a lot, depending on
you. Okay. That's... All right, very good. Okay. The Adkan, the math and the amounts. Right, you're right. I was thinking the same thing also. He looked at protein and okay. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing also. But he's a doctor. I'm not. So I'm quiet. I keep to myself. Okay. All right. We now move on in the Mishnah and okay. We're going back to Eruv Chatzeros. Okay. I know we're going to be bouncing a lot. Look, we just talked about the diet, so we're definitely bouncing around in topics now. But now we move back to the topic of Eruv Chatzeros. And basically now the discussion we're going to have is as follows. Remember, not long ago in the Masechta, in the Ayins, Ayin Vav, Ayin Zayin, so we had a discussion of the following. I had two chatzeros that were next to one another. There was a wall separating the two chatzeros. And the wall had a nice base to it. Who is the owner of that base? The answer is nobody. Remember, I compared it to Switzerland. It's a totally neutral area. It's owned by neither of the chatzeros. Now, you want to go to the top... You want to have a nice meal on the top of the wall. You could do that. That's fine. Right? The wall, let's say the wall is dollar by dollar, and let's say it's 10 tefachim high. It's its own separate rishus. So you can go to the top of the wall, have a little picnic on the top of the wall. But neither chatzer, even if each chatzer made an eruv, neither chatzer can transfer from the chatzer to the top of the wall because it's not theirs. Okay? And if you remember, we had a lengthy discussion back then. Not too long, it was a couple dapim. But we had a discussion back then, well, what if one of the chatzeros have an easier time accessing the wall? So that can they claim it? And the answer essentially was yes. If they can make their ascent to the wall easier, so then they can claim the top of the wall. The term that we used back then was miut. Basically reducing the height of the wall, not by actually reducing the height of the wall, but making the ease of access easier. Okay. That was the discussion back then. Now we're going to have a very similar discussion, although it's going to be, we're going to look at things a little bit differently. Basically, let me first just map it out, and then we'll see it inside in the Mishnah. Basically, now what we're going to be taking a look at is a chatzar that had two floors to it. People living in the bottom floor, people living in the top floor. Now, normally in such a scenario, the way we would normally envision is that anyone living on the second floor has to go down into the first floor and then go out. What we're looking at, a better way to look at it, is that people living on the second floor had their own exits from the second floor, right? It's almost like the fire ladders that, you know, we remember back in the city. And they had their own way coming down. Now, you can easily argue, okay, so the members of the chatzer, so basically, under certain circumstances, and Rashi tries to spell it out, they're basically their own separate, they could be viewed as their own separate entity. What about the fact that they have a ladder? So Rashi points out, the ladder doubles. It's a Pesach, but it's also a wall. So really, even though, yes, it's true, they have ladders going down, but that ladders are not necessarily a Pesach into the Chatzar. Essentially, what I'm trying to paint over here is a picture where the first floor and the second floor are really two separate entities. Okay. Now, can they make a joint Eruv? Absolutely. In fact, it's probably better for all members of this Chatzar to merge together, both the members of the first floor and the members of the second floor. They certainly can merge together, but they don't have to. And if for whatever reason the first floor and the second floor make separate Eruvin, which they're entitled to do, so now what the Mishnah is going to be discussing is the following. What about, let's say I have structures in the Chatzer that are high off the ground. Who can claim ownership of those high structures in the Chatzer? That's what the Mishnah is going to be discussing. I know it's a very limited circumstance. It's only talking about a scenario where I have a first floor and a second floor, and they don't merge and make a single Eruv. Okay, but that's the topic of discussion. We start with the Mishnah. We're on Pei Gimel Amud Beis. Anshei Chatzer v'anshei Merpeset shachu v'lo irvu. So I have the Merpeset and the Chatzer, and they don't make a merge joint Eruv, but each one makes a separate Eruv. So kol shegavol yutfach l'merpeches. I'm sorry, l'merpeses. Any object in the Chatzer that's above 10 tfachim, shayach l'merpeset. Pachos mikan, lechatzer. Anything below 10 tfachim, shayach lechatzer. Chuyas abor v'asela gavol masar tfachim l'merpeses. If I have a raised pit, if I have a stone, a large stone that's higher than 10 tfachim, so that's shayach l'merpeses. The Gemara later on will ask, I don't understand, the pit? What do you mean? What do you mean raised pit? Meaning the rim is raised, but in other words, obviously the pit itself is subterranean. So why should it be shayach l'merpeset? So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask that question later on. We're going to come to that question. But if the stone or the pit or the raised pit is below 10 tefachim, shayach to the chatzer, the bnei chatzer. And all this is only going to be if the stone or the raised pit is right next to the merpeset. However, if it's not near the merpeset, avam b'meflagis, afilu gavol yutfachim lechatzer, then it's going to be shayach to the chatzer. Veizu smucha kol shein rechok arba tfachim, and the Mishnah here is very clear and very specific in terms of how far away from the merpeset the stone is considered muflag. If the stone or the raised pit is more than 4 tfachim away from the merpeset, it's not shayach lemerpeset. Okay, pshita. That is the Mishnah, and now we start with the Gemara. Zebe Pesach ula zebe Pesach. Look, we're going to now get into this discussion of who can claim ownership of the top. In other words, and if you have the picture book, it's great, it's helpful. But basically, I have two chatzeros, they're next to one another. They both have access to a platform, and it's equal. Meaning both of them basically have equal access to the platform. So that platform now is shayach to neither. Okay, in other words, because since they have equal access. So pshita, the Gemara says, let's start off with some obvious points. Right. Lezebe Pesach, Lezebe Pesach, Lezebe Pesach, Hainu Chalon, Shebein Shtei Chatzeros. So that, the Gemara says, then go back to the Ayins. Ayin Zayin, Ayin Ches, right? And go review all those Gemaras that we did back then, where if two Chatzeros have equal access to a platform, so then it's neither of them can claim to it, and therefore it is neutral territory. And which means, of course, that neither chatzer can transfer from their chatzer to this area. Now, let's say it's really high off the ground. Now, by high off the ground means I got to throw it up there in order to get up there. So, but in other words, basically, and it's funny, it's hard to visualize this, but that's anything above 10 tefachim. Now, even for me, who's vertically challenged, if it's above 10 tefachim, I don't know how to throw it on there. This table over here is approximately 10 tefachim off the ground. So, okay, but I'm just telling you, that's the Gemara views anything above 10 tefachim, it's like, it's high. Okay, and that's why the Gemara uses the descriptive term of zrika. Got to throw it on there. So, So that's a wall between two chatzeros, fine, which is above 10 tefachim. Let's say it's a drop, meaning like we described earlier on the ions. It's a ditch running between two chatzeros. And in order for anyone to put something into the ditch, they got lowered into the ditch. So again, that goes back to the Gemara that we did earlier. But now, those are all the obvious. Now let's go with some less obvious. Well, not yet. Let's say for one chatzer, it's a simple Pesach. It's like you just walk there, you just play down over there. For the other chatzer, they got to throw it up. Right? In other words, basically, the two chatzeres are on a slant, and so therefore, one is going to have much easier access than the other. So, Haina Darabba bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Nachman. So again, the Gemara says, go back to the ayins, and you're going to see that basically we discussed that case already once before. Lazeb Pesach v'lazeb Shilshah. Now, again, the chatzeres are built on an incline. So for one of them, it's a simple Pesach, and for the other one, it's a low drop. A drop below 10 tefachim, hainu derav shizbi, and again, amar av Nachman. That goes back to the Gemara that we did earlier, obviously the one that has easier access, obviously. All this is obvious. Good. Lezeb shulshu v'lezeb zrika. Okay, let's say I have a platformed area, and again, it's a real steep incline from one chatzit to the other, right? For those of you who could picture Harnof, right? You know those buildings in Harnof, where basically, when you walk in from one side, you're on like the fifth floor on the other side, right? It's okay. I mean, in other words, it's a hill. It's a mountain built on it. It's a city built on a hill. So lezeb shulshav lezeb zrika. So in other words, from one chatzer, it's a drop of more than 10 tefachim. From the other chatzer, it's an ascent of greater than 10 tefachim. So now the Gemara says, now what? Can we claim that one has easier access than the other? So my Amarav Shneim Asurim, Sarav says no. It's equally difficult for either Chatzar to access this middle area, and therefore, equals in this regard means neither can make a claim to the area. Ushmul Omer Nostin Oso Lazer Shebeshosho. Shelazer Tashmisha Benachas Velazer Tashmisha Bekasha. And so now we have a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Rav says, they're both equally difficult. I award that middle area to nobody, says Rav. Shmuel says, no. I think the one who has the drop, meaning the one who is in higher elevated ground, he has easier access, because dropping something onto an area is easier than having to climb and ascend. Okay, so good. So that's a simple machlokas now between Rav and Shmuel, in terms of whether or not any chatzer, either chatzer, can make a claim that they have easier access to this middle area. Tinan. And so now, why are we talking about this now? Because our Mishnah may, emphasis on the word may take a stand on this very issue. Tinan, because look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah deals with the following. Anshe chatzer v'anshe mir peses, sheshachru v'lo irvu. Let's say I have now my two stories. First floor, second floor. And they did not make a joint Eruv. They made two separate Eruvin. So, the Gemara says that any item that's above 10 tefachim is shaykh lemer pesach. Any item that's below 10 tefachim is shaykh lechatzer. Now, Now, the Gemara enters into our Mishnah with a preconceived notion of what exactly our Mishnah means. Our Gemara thinks right now that our Mishnah is describing the Mirpeset not as the second floor, but as a platform between the first floor and the second floor. And right now the Gemara thinks that if you are on the second floor, it's a drop to get down to the Mirpeset. So the Gemara says, "Umaykar le Mirpeset, the Kasaka be Mirpeset." And the reason why it's called the Mirpeset is because in order to get to my house, I first got to climb to the balcony, and then from the landing of the balcony, I then climb again to get to my house. So it's almost like basically it's a landing, but it's not the actual point of the second story. Now the Gemara says, now that we have that preconceived notion, which you know what's going to happen, it's going to get challenged. But now that we have that preconceived notion, Ama Kol Hazeh B'Shulshul Hazeh B'Zrika Nosen Osol Hazeh She'B'Shulshul. So now the Gemara envisions that, oh, I see. So if you're living on the second floor, so for you now, it's a drop. For you living on the first floor, that's an ascent. And if all this is correct, so then what comes out now is that if for one group it's an ascent, And for another group, it's a drop. We're going to award it for the group with the drop. That's the way the Gemara views the Mishnah. If all this is correct, so then it sounds like Shmuel is absolutely correct. So the Gemara says, but that was an assumption, and that's not true. Kida'ama Rav Huna losan hadarim b'mepesas, achanam losan hadarim b'mepesas. So the Gemara says your assumption was incorrect. The merpesa was actually the landing of the second floor. Meaning the second floor is on the merpesa. I'achim asefa. So the Gemara says, so then I don't get it. Because then go on in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah then goes on to write, pachus mikan lechatzer. That if I have any item that's less than 10 tefachim, who do I award it to? I award it to the members of the chatzer. The Gemara says, slow down. Why are you awarding it to the member of the chatzer? Meaning the people living on the merpeset also have access to this area, and all they need to do is drop it onto the pillar. And mind you, that the merpeset is the actual landing of the second floor. So the Gemara is assuming now they're within 10 tefachim of the block, even though the chatzer is also within 10 tefachim of the block. Amai lezeh bepesach. So the Gemara says, it comes out now that this pillar that's right next to the building, which is within 10 tefachim of the top and within 10 tefachim of the bottom, so then that means that each one, both merpeset and ground floor, have equal access to the block. So that means then that no one can claim rightful ownership of the block. My lechatzer, af lechatzer. So the Gemara says, you're correct. And now the way we're going to understand our Mishnah is that if the pillar is below 10 tefachim, and since each one, both the B'nai Amir Peset and the B'nai Achatz have equal access to it, so therefore it's awarded to neither. Ushneim Asurim. Hachinam Imastab, and the Gemara says, and this is in fact the correct Pshat in the Mishnah. How do I know that? Midiktani Seva Bemedvar Mamor Mismucha. Because what did the Mishnah say? That's only if it's close to the Mirpeset. Ava Bemuflakis Avilu Gavoya Tvachim Lechatzer My Lechatzer. If it's far away, so then I award it to the Chatzer. The Gemara says, what do you mean you award it to the Chatzer? Elam Lechatzer Vishare. Does that mean that you're really going to allow the Bnei Chatzer to carry? Am I? Rishusa Tetavayu. The Gemara says, I really don't understand. Don't both have at least a access to this area. So the Gemara tells us that what the Mishnah means is that since both have a way of accessing this area, so that means that it therefore it becomes neutral. Okay, let's just do a little bit more for today. Just do one more Shema Mina, Tanan. The Gemara says, "Chuyas habor v'asel shein gavon asar lamerpesas pachus mikan lechatzer." The stone, the raised pit, if it is close, I'm sorry, if it is higher than 10 tefachim, it's shaykh lamerpeset. If it's below 10 tefachim, it's shaykh lechatzer. I'm Rav Huna lo sama dar b'merpeses. So again, here's where Rav Huna says, when we say merpeset, we're not talking about a landing that then ascends higher up. It means the merpeset is actually where the people on the second floor are living. So Tenach Sela Bor Ma'ikal Ameim. The Gemara says, look, I get stone. But what about pit? That's strange. In other words, the pit, even though the rim is raised, but aren't you now dropping into the pit? So Am Rav Yitzchak, Breid Rav Yehuda, Chababor Malei Amayim Askinan. So the Gemara says, well, the pit's filled with water. So in other words, it's a raised rim. And actually, the rim of the pit is filled with water. The hachasra, the Gemara says, okay, but you're going to be filling up, you're going to be using the water. So since you're going to be using the water, ultimately it's going to go down. So the center of the pit is going to be below 10 tefachim from the merpeset. So the Gemara gives an argument, and the Gemara says, well, once permitted, always permitted. The Gemara says, adrabah. The Gemara says, yeah, but you want to give an argument, we can go the other way. We know the pit's going to get emptied out. So just like when the pit is empty, it's going to be asur. So even when it's filled, it's going to be asur. Ella, Amar Abaye, Hacha Bebor, Malaya Peres Askinan. So the Gemara says, okay, so don't fill the pit with water, fill it with fruit. Vahachasre Bitivla. I'm sorry, Vahachasre, the Gemara says, okay, people are going to take the fruit over the course of Shabbos, but Tevel. So the Gemara says, we're talking about where the fruit is Tevel. It's on tithed produce. Nobody's going to be touching the fruit. Dekanami diktani, the Gemara says, I'm telling you, it's talking about tevel, dumi de sela. Because fruit, because the pit was compared to the stone. Just like the stone is something which is muksa, the fruit is also something which is muksa. Look, a stone, who's going to make a gzera by a stone? If a boar, ligzor, zimna damaya pears, misukanim. But if we're talking about a pit, yes, the pit right now is filled with tevel fruit, but the pit could also be filled with tithed produce, produce which is musukan. And so therefore, that pit is not permitted, because people are going to take the fruit away. So tricha, that's why I needed both cases in the Mishnah, just to make sure that we understand that no gzera was made, even by the pit filled with fruit. Okay, we finished today the discussion on the Gemara of Shiurim. We quantified how much a loaf is, machlokas between the Tanayim. Our conclusion is that for my Erev, I need to drop bread down, which is equivalent to either, according to Rabbi Shimon, 8 eggs, or according to Rabbi Yochanan Broker, 6 eggs. Okay. And then we went from there and spiraled into a discussion of other units of measurement. We talked about the increased measuring cups over the years. We talked about Rebbe's 217-egg saw measuring cup, which seemed to be large. We explained how it got to 217. And then we moved on to Pegim Omid Beis, and we talked today about members of the first and second floor and them having equal access to an area in between, thereby neutralizing that area. Neither can use it if either one of them has easier access to it. Therefore, they can claim rights to it. Adkan. We will continue the daf tomorrow. Have a great Shabbos, everyone.